Chapter 15. Well, there is no denying it, the paladin was in great form that night. Such style, such noble grace of gesture, such grandeur of attitude, such energy when he got going, such steady rise, on such sure wing, such nicely graduated expenditures of voice according to the weight of the matter, such skillfully calculated approaches to his surprises and explosions, such belief-compelling sincerity of tone and manner, such a climaxing peal from his brazen lungs, and such a lightning-vivid picture of his mailed form and flaunting manner when he burst out before that despairing army. And oh, the gentle art of the last half of his last sentence delivered in the careless and indolent tone of one who has finished his real story, and only adds a colorless and inconsequential detail, because it has happened to occur to him in a lazy way. It was a marvel to see those innocent peasants. Why, they went all to pieces with enthusiasm, and roared out applauses fit to raise the roof and wake the dead. When they had cooled down at last and there was silence, but for the heaving and panting, old Laxert said, admiringly, "As it seems to me, you are an army in your single person." "Yes, that is what he is," said Noel Reingesson, convincingly. "He is a terror, and not just in this vicinity. His mere name carries a shudder with it to distant lands, just a mere name. And when he frowns, the shadow of it falls as far as Rome, and the chickens go to roost an hour before schedule time." "Yes, and some say, Noel Reingesson, you are preparing yourself for trouble. I will say just one word to you, and it will be to your advantage too. I saw that the usual thing had got a start. No man could prophesy when it would end. So I delivered Joan's message, and went off to bed. Joan made her goodbyes to those old fellows in the morning, with loving embraces and many tears, and with a packed multitude for sympathizers, and they rode proudly away on their precious horses, to carry their great news home. I had seen better riders, some will say that, for horsemanship was a new art to them. The vanguard moved out at dawn, and took the road, with bands braying and banners flying. The second division followed at 8. Then came the Burgundian ambassadors, and lost us the rest of that day, and the whole of the next. But Joan was on hand, and so they had their journey for their pains. The rest of us took the road at dawn, next morning, July 20th. And got how far? 6 leagues. Tremouille was getting in his sly work with the vacillating king, you see. The king stopped at St. Markle and prayed 3 days. Precious time lost for us, precious time gained for Bedford. He would know how to use it. We could not go on without the king, that would be, to leave him in the conspirators' camp. Joan argued, reasoned, implored, and at last we got underway again. Joan's prediction was verified. It was not a campaign, it was only another holiday excursion. English strongholds lined our route. They surrendered without a blow. We garrisoned them with Frenchmen and passed on. Bedford was on the march against us with his new army by this time, and on the 25th of July the hostile forces faced each other and made preparation for battle. But Bedford's good judgment prevailed, and he turned and retreated toward Paris. Now was our chance. Our men were in great spirits. Will you believe it? Our poor stick of a king allowed his worthless advisers to persuade him to start back for Guine, whence he had set out when we first marched for Reims and the coronation. And we actually did start back. The 15-day truce had just been concluded with the Duke of Burgundy, and we would go and tarry at Guine until he should deliver Paris to us without a fight. We marched to Bray. Then the king changed his mind once more, and with it his face toward Paris. Joan dictated a letter to the citizens of Reims, to encourage them to keep heart in spite of the truce, and promising to stand by them. She furnished them the news herself, that the king had made this truce, and in speaking of it, she was her usual frank self. She said she was not satisfied with it, and didn't know whether she would keep it or not. That if she kept it, it would be solely out of tenderness for the king's honor. All French children know those famous words. How navy they are. De cette rive coup I ate fate, je ne suis pas content, et je ne sais sig la tiendrai. Sig la teens, si sir assoulment pour garder l'honneur du roi. But in any case, she said, she would not allow the blood royal to be abused, and would keep the army in good order, and ready for work at the end of the truce. Poor child, to have to fight England, Burgundy, and a French conspiracy all at the same time, it was too bad. She was a match for the others, but a conspiracy, nobody is a match for that, when the victim, that is to be injured, is weak and willing. It grieved her, these troubled days, to be so hindered and delayed and baffled, and at times she was sad, and the tears lay near the surface. Once, talking with her good old faithful friend and servant, the bastard of Orleans, she said, if it might, but please God to let me put off this steel raiment, and go back to my father and my mother, and tend my sheep again with my sister and my brothers, who would be so glad to see me. By the 12th of August we were camped near De Martin. Later we had a brush with Bedford's rear guard, and had hopes of a big battle on the morrow, but Bedford and all his force got away in the night, and went on toward Paris. Charles sent heralds, and received the submission of Beauvais. The Bishop Pierre Cauchon, that faithful friend and slave of the English, was not able to prevent it, though he did his best. He was obscure then, but his name was to travel round the globe presently, and live forever in the curses of France. Bear with me now, while I spit in fancy upon his grave. Compiègne surrendered, and hauled down the English flag. On the 14th we camped 2 leagues from Senlis. Bedford turned and approached, and took up a strong position. We went against him, but all our efforts, to beguile him out from his entrenchments failed, though he had promised us a duel in the open field. Night shut down. Let him look out for the morning. But in the morning he was gone again. We entered Compiègne the 18th of August, turning out the English garrison and hoisting our own flag. On the 23rd, Joan gave command to move upon Paris. The king and the clique were not satisfied with this, and retired sulking to Senlis, which had just surrendered. Within a few days many strong places submitted: Crail, Pont-Saint-Maixence, Choisy, Gournay-sur-Rond, Remy, La Neuville-en-Hez, Maguey, Chantilly, Saintons. The English power was tumbling, crash after crash. And still the king sulked and disapproved, and was afraid of our movement against the capital. On the 26th of August, 1429, Joan camped at St. Denis, in effect, under the walls of Paris. And still the king hung back and was afraid. If we could, but have had him there to back us with his authority. Bedford had lost heart and decided to waive resistance, and go and concentrate his strength in the best and loyalist province remaining to him, Normandy. If we could only have persuaded the king to come and countenance us with his presence and approval at this supreme moment. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.